The journey to real magic begins in your mind. The main tool you need to create miracles is not a magic wand, but a new connection with your inner intelligence. In this session, Wayne has a brief outline of the 7 beliefs you must embrace if you want to live magically.
And the first one of these beliefs is that there is an invisible, but yet a knowable life force within you. You've got to cultivate an awareness of this invisible life force, this divine, exquisite, organizing intelligence that takes the limited number of minerals that are in the world, the stuff, the raw material of nature, and organizes it in such a way so that some things come out to be snails, and some things come out to be human beings, and some things come out to be rocks and granite, and some things come out to be planets and galaxies, and that the organizing intelligence that does it is the key. It is not the minerals or the physicalness that is what is significant. And what is significant here is that you have showed up as a human form. The organizing intelligence has taken the minerals, the raw stuff of nature, and created a physical form. But within that physical form is that organizing intelligence. You couldn't be listening to these tapes if it wasn't. That's where you first and foremost want to make contact. Secondly, your thoughts, this invisible intelligence, are something that you control, and they originate with you. So you are the origin of what you choose to think about. That is the beauty of higher awareness. That is the beauty of being a human being. As a human being, you can think what you want to think. You can do what you wish with this organizing intelligence within the parameters of the body that you showed up in. You have the capacity to leave that body. You have the capacity to make that body into as healthy a specimen as you want it to be and as wealthy a specimen as you want it to be. But most of all, it's important to understand what Emerson said. The ancestor to every action in the physical world is a thought. The ancestor to your listening to this tape right now is a thought, I think I'll turn this tape on. I think I'll listen to this side of this tape today. You have to have that thought first. That thought originates with you. So that invisible intelligence that is within you, that created you, that is the wisdom that allows you to be. See, when you believe in yourself, when you trust in yourself, you trust in the wisdom that created you. That wisdom that created you, that divine intelligence, is within you, and yet you have the capacity to choose how to use it or how to access it. Those who manifest miracles and experience miracles in their life know that they have the power to make it happen. I remember doing the Oprah Winfrey Show. And I knew Oprah a long time ago when she used to be on a talk show hostess in Baltimore. And I got to know her well, and she's a wonderful, beautiful, spiritual soul, really. And I was really thrilled to see her success and when she went to Chicago and then went national and became syndicated and became one of the best-known personalities in the country. And when she got up there, and after a couple of years of her great success, I got a phone call from them one day, and they said, would you come on and do the show? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And I flew up to Chicago, and Oprah was in the green room, and she was coming to greet the guests. And, of course, we hadn't seen each other in a while, but we knew each other quite well. We were very fond of each other. And she came up to me, and I said, Oprah, congratulations on all your great success. And she said, thanks. I created it. Those were her exact words to me. I created it. And she wasn't being snippy, and she wasn't saying there weren't other people who helped me. She was saying the thought to have this originated with me, and it did, because she used to tell me in those days when she was teaming up and doing a co-hostess job on a small station in Baltimore that I can create this magnificence in my life. She always believed that and had that power, and that vision never left. And so if you know and understand that your thoughts, whatever they are, originate with you, what we're really saying here is that you create your own life because you are what you think about all day long. As you think, so shall you be is the theme of this entire program. As you think, not as you be, so shall you think. Your thoughts aren't going to come from what you do out there physically, unless you want to maintain a real status quo kind of life. But as you think, your thoughts originate with you. You have the capacity to create your life with your thoughts. The third belief to cultivate is that there are no limits. You see, limits exist in the physical world. They are beginnings and ends. Your body is conceived, it is born, it dies. There are limits. There are limits to how much food can be held in your stomach, how many breaths that you can take. The physical world has limitations in it. The invisible world, the world of the commander in the command center, has no limit. How many thoughts can you put into a brain? If thoughts are formless and a brain has form, how many formless things can you put into something that is form? Well, the answer is it's just apples and oranges. One has no limits, one has many limits. Where you live in a world of no limits is in that higher consciousness place. In your dream, for example, when you enter into this world, you can go backwards and forwards. Whereas in the physical world, you think that you can't go back in and be 20 again if you're 50 years old. You can't do that. Whereas in your mind, you have the capacity to do that. Your mindset is what creates real magic for you. It starts in your mind, and later on we'll move to how you can literally do it in the physical world. But you have to know that there is nothing that limits you in your mind. And anything that you can think of, you can conceive of in your mind, you can produce in the world. So the fact that limits exist means that they only exist in the physical world. What separates us from each other is our physicalness, but what connects us is our invisibleness, and there are no limits there at all. The fourth belief to cultivate in creating real magic is that your life has a purpose. Everything in the universe at the quantum level is on purpose. Your life is like a parenthesis in eternity. You're conceived, you're born, you die, and eternity surrounds this time-space event called your life. Nothing in the universe, as we study it, is without purpose. Even though we may not understand what its purpose is, your life has a grand mission. You have a heroic mission for being here. As Kierkegaard said, we all come to Earth with sealed orders. And it's really discovering those sealed orders. And you'll find that your purpose as a human being isn't really about what you do in your life. It really isn't about the daily activity of your life that is my purpose to be an accountant or is it to be a dentist? Is my purpose to drive a cab or to stay home and take care of my children? Is my purpose to write a book or is it to what? It isn't really about that. Your purpose will be defined for you as you detach yourself from these concerns with outcome and shift to how may I serve. You see, you can't get anything while you're here. You can't own anything. You can't have anything while you're here. So the only thing you can do with this life, since you can't take anything with you, you can't collect anything, you can't own anything, the only thing you can do with this life is give it away. You show up in a little body, you leave in a body, and you take nothing with you. The measure of your life will be not in what you accumulate, but in what you give away. And when you get your life on purpose, you'll find that your purpose is about giving. It's about giving, loving, and sharing. That's the fabric of the universe. Harmony, ease, not dis-ease. Within every cell is that organizing intelligence that is at ease. You will discover your grand purpose as you shift from what's in it for me to how may I serve and assist others. And when you get to that point, it won't matter what you do. It won't matter whether you're producing a tape series like I'm doing right now, or whether you're holding your little baby in your arms, or whether you're going for a swim, or whatever activity of your life, you'll find that you are on purpose when you are about giving. And I find that one thing in my... I stop categorizing things in my life as, I work so many hours, and I spend so many hours with my family, and I spend so many hours exercising, and all of that is about purpose. All of it is. Every single thing. And whatever it is that I'm doing, I am focused on how can I serve? How can I best do that? And it keeps me purposeful all of my days. And it stops me from searching around underneath rocks and behind trees to find my purpose, like it's going to show up someplace. It isn't something that's outside of you. You came into the world of form from the eternal to this world of limitations and physicalness, and you came here with a purpose. And it is about discovering that divine intelligence that is within you and giving it away. So what you have to learn how to do in whatever it is that you do is to fall in love with what you do and then sell that love, give that love away. And what you're doing won't make that much difference. The fifth thing that you want to develop in your consciousness of creating a real magic mindset is to understand that you overcome weakness by leaving it behind. You leave old habits behind by starting out with your thoughts. I no longer want this thing to be a part of my life. You change around the belief system that I have to struggle and I have to work hard and I have to set goals and I have to figure out a way to do it. And instead you understand that the process of creating real magic is one of leaving behind old ways of being. I sometimes look at the ways that I used to conduct myself and the things that I used to do and the trouble that I've allowed myself to get into and the poverty that was a part of my life and even the ways that I treated people when I was a younger man in my first marriage and things like that. I look at those things and I say, how could I ever have behaved that way? How could I have ever treated someone in those ways before? And rather than fill myself with guilt, I remind myself that my life has a purpose and that I got past those things not by feeling guilty, but by just leaving them behind. It's almost like you have to create an image for yourself of these behaviors that you see that aren't working. The things that you may be doing, the fact that you have a fast temper, the fact that you are always in a hurry, the fact that you don't take enough time for your children and make the priorities of your life right, the fact that you may have addictive behaviors that just don't work for you, the fact that you may not be honest in your relationships, or that you're lacking integrity in some business practices, or whatever it may be, things that you just no longer want for yourself in your life because they don't keep you spiritually aligned. What I did with them is I put them on little pieces of paper in my mind, and I put them in a balloon. And I blow up the balloon and I stuff them in there and I blow the balloon up and I tie a knot. And in my image, my visualization, it just goes away. It goes up into the air and it flies away and I've left it behind. And I now look back on some of those crass behaviors that I've just described, all of which at one time or another were part of my life in some way, not severe always, but certainly a part of my life. And I've left them behind. And I'm, believe it or not, grateful for having been there. Grateful for what I had to, how I had to learn it. I'm not questioning God and the universe for how the teachers appear in my life. Those events were things that I had to go through in order to get to this more transcendent place. I bless those things, just like I bless every cold or every influenza bout or every sickness that has ever entered into my life as something that teaches me how to go past it. There you are again. Oh, I see. Oh, welcome back. Oh, there, I lost my temper again. Oh. With one of my children, I might say the wrong thing or raise my voice, and instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't do that, and isn't that awful, I say, the way that I will overcome that is I will leave it behind. And I just do that real quick thing with the balloon. I just, and I let it fly away. And the next time when they behave in the very same way, which they do every day, just to test me and to teach me, and I see that as my teacher, and then I get to a point where I no longer have to do that, where I can hug them when I used to want to smack them, when I can kiss them when I used to want to yell at them. You change your behaviors not by analyzing them and not by struggling, but by leaving them behind, stepping out of those old clothes and walking in new shoes, walking in a whole new wardrobe of new consciousness. You can leave behind every single piece of behavior that doesn't work for you or that inhibits you from having the miracles that you want for yourself. Whatever those miracles might be and how you can visualize them for yourself right now as you're listening to this tape, whatever those miracles are, you can leave behind all the impediments to the manifestation of those miracles by walking away from them, by just simply leaving them behind one step at a time, making a conscious, thoughtful decision. I no longer am going to be thinking in that way. And today, in this moment, I'm going to see if I can leave that one behind. I'm going to just bite my tongue one time. I'm not going to try to make her wrong this one time. I'm not going to yell when I used to. I'm not going to have that cigarette in this moment. In those ways, you leave behind those behaviors, and then you get to a point where, like I do, and I've talked about it on some of my other tapes, where I walk by a machine that sells soda pop with sugar in it, and I feel so superior, I can hardly stand myself. And I see people, I just stepped off of a plane here in Chicago, and when I stepped off the plane, I noticed the room was filled with smoke because they don't allow smoking on the planes anymore, finally. And I noticed that all these people standing around smoking in this nervous kind of way, and the air was just filled with all of the smoke, and I always have this, like, this real powerful knowing that I left that behind. I didn't conquer it. I didn't defeat it. It's still there. It's still in the universe for people to choose it. But I left that behind. And I keep reminding myself when I can put my arms around my wife now and just tell her how great she is, that I used to wrap myself in anguish and try to prove how wrong she was. And I don't have to do that. You leave it behind. And you do it in your mind first. And then you bring it about in reality. The sixth belief is that if you want to create miracles in your life, you have to make a thorough examination of all of the things that you believe to be impossible, and then shift that consciousness 180 degrees. You have to understand that impossible is not a part of the consciousness of miracle makers, that miracles in all form, whatever it is that would constitute a miracle for you, might require some action on your behalf, some new way of thinking on your behalf, or some event to transpire, or something really phenomenal to happen, like the right lottery ticket or whatever, that in order for that to happen, you have to understand that your doubt or your belief that it can't happen is the thing that is keeping it from happening. That doubt and fear are not the avenues that you can take to manifest miracles. You have to traverse the path of knowing and trust. And so Stuart Wilde, who writes in a book called Miracles, in a little tiny booklet called Miracles, he says these words. He says, because the universal law is indestructible and therefore infinite, we can presume that whatever power was used by miracle workers in the past must still be available today. My way of saying that is that the universal law that has ever allowed anything miraculous to occur has not been repealed. It's still on the books. It's still available to you. It's not there just for some people, and some people don't get it. It is within your capacity as a spiritual being having a human experience. It is within your consciousness to be able to manifest anything that any human being has ever manifested. It is within your power to access it and do it. But you must take a look at all those things that you think are impossible for you, and change those beliefs around. And I'm talking about the person who's the lowest in the gutter, the person who is the drug addict who can't function any longer, the person who has been overweight their entire lifetime, the person who's lived in indescribable poverty for their entire lifetime, the person who has been abused, the person who wants to be able to transform their life and to access something much more magnificent in it, the person who has thought of themselves as homely and unattractive, the person who has always been alone and has never been able to create a relationship. Whatever it is that has been your history, if you have a continuing belief that it is impossible for you to change that, that doubt, that fear will manifest a continuation of the same pattern in your life. You must shift that around to a new knowing and affirm that it is possible. For me, and for my wife, Marcy, as I began to write the outline for Real Magic and prepare myself to create these tapes that you're listening to, I didn't really know completely whether or not such things as I've read about in other places could really happen, some of the miracles that you read about. I believed, I was open, but I didn't quite have that knowing. And somehow it was almost as if the universe were telling me that the knowing will come. The knowing will come. You'll get it. Just stay open and rid yourself of all of this doubt. Well, the knowing came in a really dramatic way. I was on Maui and I gave a talk at this particular church, this Unity Church on Maui, which is something that I do every year after we spend our summers there, if we can, with all the children. And it's this... To me, Maui represents a very spiritual place, a consciousness. And I gave a talk, and a very striking lady was in the church, and she had like a turban around her head, and she came up to me, and she said, "My name is Gail Longy, and my husband owns Longy's Restaurant on Maui in Lahaina. Very famous restaurant, very well-known, big portions, great place." And I'd been there many, many times. And I said, "Oh, it's really great to meet you." She said, "I really loved what you had to say." She said, "On Wednesday, we are having a guest at our house. Would you like to come?" And I said, "Well, who is it?" She said, "Well, his name is Mauricio. And if you read Shirley MacLaine's book, Going Within, which is a book about meditation," she said, "in chapter 14, she describes who he is." And I said, "I've read that book, and I remember now." And I just had sort of, and I went back, and I happened to have it there with me, and I read the whole chapter. And in there, she describes this particular man. It was very intriguing when I read that chapter, but I must admit that when I read it, I wondered if maybe Shirley hadn't slipped over the edge a little bit or gone way out on a limb as she wrote about it. And she tells this whole story of Mauricio and these lights. And I had that skepticism, that doubt that I've been talking to you about ridding yourself of. And it was very much present as I was reading that. And yet, I have come to a point where I really know within me that nothing is impossible. In that unified field, all things are possible. And so I was in the process of putting together my thoughts for this Real Magic. It was right at the time when I was writing the outline, and when I had this inner kind of dialogue with myself that I mentioned earlier about how I would proceed to write a book about creating miracles, and how would I proceed to talk about this on tapes, and who was I, and the inner dialogue always seemed to come back that you will have the answers. They will show up for you. So 9 o'clock Wednesday came, and we drove over to Gail and Bob Longy's house, and Bob was outside with his son and a couple of other people, and he said Mauricio was already there. And he said, he's up in our bedroom right now. And he said that Mauricio is with Gail's mother. And he said, "Come on out on the patio." And it was dark. And we looked out on the patio, and he said, "Watch in the room." So we could see the lights from where we were standing on the patio. And all of a sudden, the lights in this dark room went off like lightning was striking in the room. And Bob, who is sort of a coarse, wonderful guy, but he's got his own vocabulary that is a bit rough, you might say. He just was overflowing with enthusiasm and excitement and saying things like, "This is, if you think that this is fake," he said, "I had this whole room checked out. I brought this." He's this guy saying, he says, "In my bedroom, this is no way that this thing can be artificial." He said, So we went back into the room inside, and maybe 15 minutes later, Gail's mother came down the stairs, and she was in a fog. She was almost like she was drugged. It was a very strange thing, but a very, very like peaceful look on her. And I had met her before at the church, and she looked right past me, and she walked into another part of the house. And I said to her, "Well, what was it like?" And she said, "I can't describe it. It was just wonderful." And she just disappeared. And we were going to go next, but Mauricio then came down the stairs, and he was a short man, stocky build, approximately 60 years old. He had a T-shirt on that was soaked in this mane of white hair and very, very peaceful looking. He was 60, but he had no lines on his face at all. And he spoke Portuguese, very, very little English. And he knew of my book, because my books have been published in Brazil in Portuguese. And he knew of me, but we hadn't met. And he came over and he warmly shook my hand, but he was soaking wet. I mean, dripping, soaking wet. He had to take his shirt off and they could literally wring it out and put another T-shirt on. And I said, thank you very much. And he said, no thank me, God's work, something to that effect. And he said, "Just go upstairs." And he said, "I'll take about 15 minutes. And he came and went into the kitchen, and he came back with a gallon thing of water, and he drank the entire thing of water. This was like a gallon of water. He drank the whole thing, just consumed. And after about 15 minutes, he said, "Come with me." And we walked upstairs into the bedroom. My wife and I decided to do this together so that we could really corroborate each other's experience. And as we proceeded up the stairs, and we were both full of anticipation and excitement. My heart was beating fast. And it was such a beautiful room. It had a moon roof, and you could see the stars, and you could see the moon. It was a clear, beautiful night. It was in August, I believe. And as we laid down across the bed holding hands, Mauricio walked into the room and he put on some very, very soft, beautiful music. And he came up behind my wife's head and he put his hands on her forehead. And he asked us both to close our eyes and just to experience it. Now, I just said, I'm not closing my eyes. I didn't say anything, but I didn't close my eyes. I said, there's no way I'm closing my eyes when I'm in here. I am going to see everything that is going on. I'm going to experience this, the full ramifications of it. I want to know every detail. I want to see it all. My wife closed her eyes. She did what she was told. And he put his hands on her forehead, and he said, Energia, 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 like that. And as he said that, he snapped his fingers, just took his hands on it, snapped his fingers, like, and the room lit up. The room just lit up, and it came, like, right out of his body. And there was these bright lights in the room. And then they went off. It was like a flash of lightning. Then he came over to me, and he put his hand on my forehead, and his hand was hot. I mean, hot, almost like burning. And it was very, very peaceful. And he put one hand on my forehead, and he again did the same thing. Energia, energia, energia. And as he said, the third energia, like that. The light came out, and I felt it come right out of, like, right out of my forehead and right out of his hands, and the light was just, the room was a bright, bright light. There were no tricks here. There was no, there were no batteries. There were no gadgets, anything like that. And if you don't believe that, or if you believe in the skepticism, then that will be your experience of it. To me, I know I was there, and Bob Longhi, I know real well, and he was filled with assurances that he had escorted him in there, and nothing was there in his own bedroom. So this went on for 15 minutes, which is an eternity, and I had fallen like 3 days before on a slippery rock, taking the kids to this park, and I had a real bad cut on the shin of my left leg, and it was at that time it was scabbing over, and it was very painful. I was walking around with a little bit of a limp and overdoing it a little, but it was a pretty bad scrape. And he put one hand on my knee and the other hand on my ankle, my instep, and he just said the same thing with the energia, energia, and this light just came right out of him and right out into the whole room. And it was like I felt an energy going through my entire body. Well, this went on for 10, 15 minutes, and it became very, very, very gently, harmoniously, perfectly, exquisitely peaceful in there, just like we were in the presence of some divine being. It was just so magnificent. Nothing, I could never describe exactly what it was like because it's beyond words. There are no words to describe what the atmosphere in that room was like. It became very light and like the incredible lightness of being, just soft and gentle and peaceful and easy and right. And it was like what I've heard people describe in Raymond Moody's books and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross when they talk about these near-death experiences where they go into the light and they become a part of it. And it's bliss. It's 100% pure, unadulterated bliss. And that was how we felt. Now, this went on for 15 minutes, and Mauricio, by this time, was just sweating bullets again. He was soaking wet, and he was such a peaceful, loving man. And then he left the room. He said, stay there for about 5 minutes. Don't get up too fast. And then he said, just come downstairs. So my wife and I we were still holding hands, and we were just incredulous. But we couldn't even speak. It was such a blissful experience. Finally, after about 5 minutes, we just sort of got up and had that real woozy, light feeling. And we came gliding down the stairs, just like Gail's mother had about an hour or so before. And Mauricio was down there gulping more water. He was also going to be with one more person that evening. At that time, we had a little baby, Sage. And she was, I think, about 9 months old, so Marcy was nursing her. And when Marcy nurses her children, she's very in tune with them, very connected to them, that intuitive kind of sense with them. And our teenage daughter, Stephanie, was babysitting, and she was having trouble with the baby. So when we came downstairs, and people, of course, were coming up saying, what was it like? We saw the lights. We go outside, and we all that. And neither one of us could talk. Somehow this bliss just kept us from being able to describe it. And I went over and got a pad of paper and wrote down notes because I knew I wanted to describe this on these tapes and I wanted to write about it and I wanted it to be exactly accurate. So I wrote down the date, the time, the experience, and what we were experiencing. And the phone rang, and it was Stephanie calling, and she said, is my mother there? And Marcy went over to the phone and picked up the phone, and Stephanie said, you've got to come home now. You've got to come home. The baby's just crying. And Marcy said, baby? What about the baby? Now, this was just a different person all day. And as a matter of fact, her appearance changed when she came down the stairs. Her very physical appearance was different. I'd never seen her face shaped that way or look that way. There was such a clarity and such a pronouncement of her bone structure and everything. Either she changed or my perceptions of her were so sharpened that I was seeing something I'd never seen in her before. And her response was, Stephanie, you're just going to have to take care of it yourself. And Stephanie's going, well, who is this? This isn't my mother I'm talking to. And she said, I'm sorry, you'll have to take it. And she just put the phone down very gently and just came over. She said, Stephanie will handle it. She hardly even remembers having said that. And we drove home that evening, and we were talking about the experience, and I had written down the notes, and I said, you know, I'm now going to start writing about miracles. I said, if this isn't a miracle, I don't know what it is. I've never felt anything like this before. It's like it totally transformed our lives, and our relationship changed. I mean, so many things. Just the way we were talking to each other was much more gentle and much more caring. And I got home, and I went in, I was taking a shower, and I came out of the shower, and I looked at my leg, and there was no scab there. It had all just sort of healed over. I mean, it was just, you could hardly tell that I had had this rather severe injury. I mean, it was really cut up pretty badly. And I noticed that I wasn't limping anymore at all. It wasn't favoring it, I should say, any longer. And I just couldn't get that somehow this thing had happened. The experience with Mauricio Panisette was very real. And as I reread that chapter 14 in Going Within, I saw that what Shirley had described in there was very similar to what we had just experienced, that there are beings who have this very special divine guidance. And even as I think of the words that Christ said of, even the least among you can do all that I have done, and even greater things. That's a paraphrase of what Christ had said. I began to take those words literally and see them in there, that we have within us very special purpose while we're here, and that we can access that and go in there and find that. I left that experience with a profound absence of judgment since that happened. I have never doubted that anything was possible for a human being to experience since that time of going through that. It was the most profound personal interactive experience with miracles occurring right there, with the ability to do things that I just thought were not possible for human beings to do. I mean, how do you get lights? This man had scars, little burns on his body from these lights that had come out, and I could see, he said they were so intense. He was put in prison in Brazil because they were just afraid of this kind of thing. They took all of his clothes away from him, and they put him in the prison cell, and they said, there, now, if you let's see you do your lights now. And sure enough, all the prisoners, he was doing it right in the cell. He had some kind of magnificent, special power. And he has committed his life to healing, to using this, whatever this is, whatever this phenomenon is. And he's been examined by physicians, and he's had all the skeptics look at it, and no one can explain what it is that he is doing. But I, Wayne Dyer, and my wife, Marcy Dyer, we were there, we were in the room, we experienced it, and we have that knowing. And there's nothing, no matter how many people are doubtful, no matter how much skepticism might come at me as a result of my sort of coming out of the closet, if you will, and telling that story, could ever take away that knowing. It's a powerful, powerful knowing. And finally, the last point that I want to make in a shifting around of beliefs that will manifest real magic for you is that you have to go beyond logic. You cannot rely upon that which you have been taught, that if it's not logical, it doesn't exist. The world doesn't function on a rational basis. The way the universe works is not based upon some rational, logical, scientific formulation in which everything fits neatly into a formula called cause and effect. At the very building block structure of nature, where energy and love and harmony reign, everything that we thought is what logically ruled the universe turns out to be no longer applicable. It just doesn't work the way we thought it did. That the fact that we're all connected, the fact that this divine intelligence flows through us, the fact that particles don't behave like particles, the fact that life curves back on itself, the fact that all matter is composed of nothing but empty space, and that all of the physical material world, the superstition of materialism, is that we think that things are material when in fact we examine them, we find out that they're not. That the secret that sits in the center and knows is not some logical formula. It's not some logical person that is there that we can find if we dissect and look closely enough. It is an invisible intelligence that is there that defies logic. Get past your rational left brain, move into your right brain, and get ready for real magic.
This is the end of Side 3. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up Side 4 for your listening.